day I will. I'll take the ride, 'cause I'd rather have connections, pleasure and pain, than be alone here with my pride. Okay, I'll take my shot, this time I'll take my chance, 'cause that's all I have left. If I don't, if I won't choose love, and pride's all I'll have left. If I don't choose love.
Well, good evening and welcome, friends, to Voices of the Sacred Feminine, whether you're across town, and good morning if you're across the globe. That cut opening tonight's show is Choose Love by Laura Kane. She's a local L.A. artist. And, you know, such an important choice, don't you think, to choose love? Too often you can turn on the TV or talk radio and just hear the hate spewing out. I don't know about you, but it doesn't make me feel good. It makes me feel icky and heavy. You know, hate for immigrants, hate for foreigners, hate for people of other religions. Just, you know, hate for women even in some places, for women's rights. You know, hate for people on food stamps, perpetuating the idea these people are lazy takers rather than they haven't had the benefits in life of those shedding our social safety net. Just remember, dear listeners, this hate is often motivated by fear. I know it's hard sometimes, but I believe it's true. We must manage to muster compassion for these people, but that doesn't mean we stop fighting back as they try very hard to dismantle every hard-fought, caring, and sharing plank we've managed to build into our social platform. We see how austerity is really making people in Europe, and we are on the way to doing the same between the right-wing wing nuts, as we call them, or the complacent Democrats who are really no more than Republican light. I believe very soon Republicans are going to push hard against Social Security and Medicare to cut back at it like they've done food stamps just recently and so many other programs the least among us need to sustain some quality of life. No, these people aren't laying around in hammocks. Many of them are working one or two jobs, but corporations have gotten away with paying them so little they can't feed their families after working all week. Well, things need to change, and we have to be that change. We have to get back to the days when greed was intolerable and a sin. Remember that? Greed was once one of the seven deadly sins. I think we can see why, can't we? Don't vote against your economic interest or let your friends. Find common ground with them and build from there. Explain what's been going on out there, because let me tell you, they really might not know if they're just hearing right-wing TV and radio. That being said, let's turn our attention to tonight's show. First up is Julian Rose, and I want to thank him so much for waking up at 3 a.m. to call in from Poland. He's going to help expand on what I was just talking about as we discuss his new book, In Defense of Life. Then, returning to the show, with it being the beginning of the month, we have Flash Silvermoon with her Astro Flash. She's going to tell us what the cosmos have cooking up for us for the rest of November. Mercury retrograde finally ends this Sunday, so if you've been laying low, you can come out on Monday. You know, we'll ask her what she predicted last time, what actually, you know, what she was able to prophesize correctly. And closing the show, Nikki Scully is with us, and the topic is spirit medicine, actual planetary healing, spirit medicine for personal and global transformation. Besides what the title suggests, we'll chat about Egypt today, because, you know, she travels there often on sacred pilgrimage. And we'll talk about the global community being formed to transform our world and the connection between physics, hard science, and shamanism. I am about to open the chat room, so if you want to send your questions, please feel free to do so. And while I do that, I want to make sure I remind you about FEM, Women Healing the World. You know, I've been talking about that documentary for quite some time, and finally, it is on my website. You can actually go to the first page of my website, KarenTate.com. Scroll down just a little bit. You'll see the beautiful logo. You can click there. And if you haven't been able to attend a local screening, because I know it hasn't been in every city and every state, because it doesn't have major national distribution like a Hollywood studio behind it, you can still see it. You don't have to rely on it being in a theater near you. So what I recommend is you pay $4.99 and you can stream it or you download it and you can play it again. You know, have your friends come over. Make a night of it. Have a movie night because in that documentary, I think it's very important. There are more pieces of the puzzle regarding how we can save ourselves and the world. So invite friends. Make it a discussion night. It'll be a lot of fun. So I ask him to wait any longer, I'm going to get to our first guest, Julian Rose. Let me tell you a little bit about him. Julian is an early pioneer of UK organic farming. They are over in England. An international activist, a writer, and an actor. He's currently president of the International Coalition to Protect the Polish Countryside. And with his Polish partner, Jagwida Lopata, is fighting to prevent GMOs getting established in Poland as well as his native England. Julian inherited a traditional country estate and a title on the premature death of his elder brother and father when he was just 19 years old. And he spent much of his life getting a handle on and then implementing a transition from the old squire way to a more progressive and green way of managing the land and bringing about a more benign relationship with estate residents. And I want to mention his website, and we'll try to remember to mention it again as we close. But it's changingcourseforlife.info. That's a little bit different, changingcourseforlife.info. And it will be updated to carry information about his book, In Defense of Life. So, Julian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karen, and thank you very much for that very nice introduction.
Well, you know, I so thank you for getting up at 3 a.m. to talk to my listeners. I have to tell you, I know they will appreciate it. You know, they so need and love to hear from people like you. Because as we were saying, you know, before we went live, I think it's very hard for us to imagine how we are going to push back against the bankers and, you know, the big agricultural tongue-tied.
It's basically the big corporations, you know, who are taking more and more of a lead in sort of owning the seeds that used to be independent, used to be owned by small seed companies. Now there's just 8 corporations in the world that own 75% of all seeds.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty scary. And, you know, it's very much like, you know, the wealth disproportion here. There are like 400 people who own, the statistics say 60% of the wealth in our country, while the rest of us own the 40%. I mean, things have gotten so out of balance. Incredible.
Yeah.
And it seems insurmountable, you know, that that we can fight back about this. But you have ideas that you want to share.
Certainly. In everything like this, and I do totally agree with you, it does appear to be insurmountable. The scale is huge. The level of degradation of the planet has got beyond the point where we feel even nature can fight back without human assistance. So the way to deal with it, I think, for the majority of people, is to start small. You know, we're rather captured by this vast problem, but very often the solution to a vast problem starts with a very small action of one's own. in that particular respect, I suggest what people should do, particularly when they're talking about the issue of food and farming, of nature, of looking after our environment, is to start looking for and supporting local growers of organic food. Or, as another option, start growing your own. Now, that might sound a bit unusual to a lot of people. Wow, start growing our own food? How could I do that? Then I'll tell you how you can do it. You can actually put a window box inside your window, and you can start planting some herbs, some mustard, some cress, some tomatoes, some salad leaves, some rocket, whatever you like, and spread those seeds in, water them, and they will start to respond. And what do you know, you have a tiny little food kitchen right in your own home. It's doing things like that that start one on the road to taking a handle on what appears to be impossible.
I guess maybe you see how really easy it is. You know, nature doesn't make it too terribly hard for us to feed ourselves.
Exactly. Not at all. In fact, nature makes it extremely easy for us to feed ourselves once we've got onto the same vibrational level as nature. We, human beings, we are part of nature. We're not separate from nature. And one of the difficulties we have today is in an urban society where more than 50% of the population of the globe are now living in cities, we've lost that contact with nature. So we must, in some form or other, reconnect with nature, because it's no different than reconnecting with ourselves, that deeper element of ourselves, that calm, more loving, more thoughtful, more passionate even, level of ourselves, as it is to go out and to commune with nature. There are parks, there are gardens, there are many different ways of doing it. You don't necessarily have to go out and be on a farm or in a big forest. But on a regular basis, I think we really do all need that contact. And we're completely starved of something very, very important if we don't have it.
Right. Well, you know, there's a funny commercial that runs here in the United States. I don't know if there would have been a way for you to ever see it, but it just sort of punctuates that disconnect. You know, they're kind of picking on the guys a little bit. It's actually the avocado growers here actually run the commercial. I think that's who it is. And it's mm-hmm. really two versions of the same commercial. The first one is you see this guy standing in front of the packaged ground meat in the grocery store. And, you know, they make you, you know, from the visuals they give you, that you understand that he's trying to figure out how he gets that meat from the cold case in the, you know, in the store to a hamburger on his plate. Or mm-hmm. there's another version of it where, you know, this guy puts a whole avocado unpeeled in the blender, and he's trying to figure out how to make guacamole. But,
yeah.
you know, I realize it's not exactly the same thing. But, I mean, I've had a guy who lives in my building who couldn't even open his refrigerator because he didn't know what side the handle was on because the handle was recessed, you know. I mean, really, the pond is kind of shallow out there sometimes, you know. We've had so much done for us that we've, you know, we are not self-sufficient very much anymore. And in a way, it's kind of scary.
Yes, it is. I think you've hit on exactly the point. We were once upon a time self-sufficient, and actually you don't have to go back very far. Really, you have to go back about 40 years in England when the country was at least 90% self-sufficient. Now, incidentally, it's only 60% self-sufficient. I don't know what the situation is in America as regards that particular scenario, but I do know this. We live in a globalized food world. We live in a globalized, agrochemically dominated food world, which means when you go to a supermarket and you buy your basic ingredients, you have no idea where they're coming from. You have no idea how they've been produced. You have no idea really what the ingredients are apart from what's on the label, and that usually doesn't tell you the whole story. So that means we're completely out of control of our own dietary needs. And that is why I illustrated at the very beginning the point that without taking control of that to some degree, we really are leaving ourselves in the hands of people who only are interested in profit. Profit
right.
and power. So,
right.
you know, the way to get around that one is to find a connection with people that aren't only interested in profit. And those are the smaller farmers, those are the growers, the small organic growers. And believe me, there's quite a few around LA. And those are the sort of people who you can do a one-to-one deal with. You can actually go there and meet them. They'll tell you how they grow the food. You'll feel they're good people, nice people. All of a sudden, life changes. And not only are you purchasing real food as opposed to very unreal, very sterile food, but you're meeting real people too. So you can start to actually build a type of community feeling. This is, I think, the number one step in getting off the bottom rung of the ladder.
Well, you know, there's they've made it easy here in L.A., and I can't speak for outside L.A. Because I've only lived in Louisiana before California, and they're pretty, you know, in the dark ages there. But, you know, they may have come out, so to speak. But, you know, we actually have farmers markets here in our neighborhoods where the organic farmers actually come out one day a week with their produce. And so if you know, if you're resistant to that, you know, box on your patio or in your window, or I mean, let's face it, you can't really grow enough there to feed yourself fully, you know. The farmer's market, you know, might be another alternative. Or, you know, I went to a green festival recently, and I was just intrigued with the hydroponics growing, you know. I know that probably used to just, you know, probably that's how they used to just grow the marijuana. But now, you know, people are actually, it seems like it's come into vogue, you know, to grow your own food in water if you don't have, you know, soil at your disposal.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it in your living room with lights, you know, artificial lights, if you want to, you know, make a room in your house, your garden.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? I would just say one thing there I was illustrating the point at the beginning that it's to get a feeling of the connection with nature that you start with some tiny seeds in a window box. It's not about feeding yourself. It's about making yourself connect up with the process whereby one is fed, ultimately. To get onto a larger scale, yes, I totally agree. Farmers markets, they really are an extraordinarily important way of the public meeting the farmer, getting access to fresh, real food, meeting real people. There's 100% difference between that and going to a large supermarket chain. Not only is it different from the point of view of the quality of what you're getting, you're putting your money into a localized type of approach. When you're going to the big supermarkets, it's going to the global economy. You'll never see it again, and it's only stimulating a situation which makes the planet worse. So, you know, this is actually a massive difference. Hydroponic is very possible, but you have to be careful about that one, because the big hydroponic growing, actually, which grows mostly salad leaves in Europe, is using drip feed agrochemicals into the water, which actually do the growing. So you've got the water, then you've got the nitrate, the phosphate, the potash, which are synthetic versions of the real thing. And in that sense, the plant is absorbing something which isn't a particularly healthy thing to do. You know, you really want to try and get away from that. So if you're going to grow hydroponically, you have to make sure you're using natural ingredients as the fertilizer and not a synthetic one.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that, because I had no idea. You know, but I also see your point, you know, that when you plant the seeds, you know, it's an undeniable connection, you know, you are experiencing with nature. I mean, I had a girlfriend once who was very big into the goddess Demeter, and one of the things she did to commit herself to learn about Demeter, you know, the goddess of grain, is she actually planted wheat and tended it for an entire year. And, you know, that way she totally understood that whole yearly cycle, you know, with the growth and everything. And I think that is important, because we're so detached. And when you're detached from something, it makes it so much easier to just devalue it or, you know, not realize that, you know, you ought to be fighting for it, you know?
Oh, yes, that's so true. You know, just before we came on, I was looking at something which struck me, and I thought to myself, I must read this when I'm on the show with Karen, because it's exactly about this. It's the Indigenous Elders and Medicine People's Council statement about the state of the planet, and it's very short. It says this.
No, please do.
Good. We acknowledge that all these devastating actions originated in human beings who are living without regard for the earth as the source of life. They have strayed from the original instructions by casting aside the Creator's natural law. It is now critical for humanity to acknowledge that we have created a path to self-destruction. We must restore the original instructions in our lives to halt the destruction. That's the passage. And
yeah.
This is coming from the wise elders, the shamans, the elders of the great Indian tribes, etc., who have had eons of experience of living and working with nature day in, day out. And of course, the point being, we don't have it. And therefore, that sort of statement might strike us as being over the top, strange, rather overly formal perhaps, but it's not. It's a warning to us that if we don't get in touch with our own natures and with nature itself, we cannot actually be progressing in the right track in order to ameliorate the conditions on this planet, some of which you outlined at the beginning of this show. So we're not just talking about something pleasant, desirable, nice choice. We're talking about actual necessity here.
Yeah, we're talking about life or death, really. I mean, let's just get right down to
yes.
it. I mean, it's our life and death. It's the planet's life and death. And, you know, people who think they're so intelligent want to minimize these sorts of people because they don't have the same values as them. You know, they're not these uber consumers and, you know, live their lifestyle or think the things they think are important. But you know what? The joke is on these rich CEOs, you know. I mean, they're the ones that are, it's going to be their karma.
Exactly.
And ours too, you know, ours too, if we can't sufficiently, you know, stand up together and wake up. I mean, here in California, for instance, I started to, we didn't have enough time for me to tell you this before we went live, but on the GMO front, for instance, we had the agricultural communities pour in so much money into our elections and convinced low-information voters, as we call them, that if we forced the, you know, grocery stores or the, you know, the people who provide our food, you know, whether it's the packaged food or whether it's the produce, to label stuff, you know, label what's in it, tell us if it's GMO, tell us if it's organic, you know, so that we know what it is. They had them convinced that if we forced them to do that, it was going to make things cost so much more money or it was going to cost jobs. And that's all you got to do that's all you have to say to Americans, and they like wilt in the corner, and they become immobilized. You know, they can't do anything because they're so afraid about, you know, losing jobs or things costing more. It's almost like they're selling their lives down the river in a way. You know, and it's just so frustrating because. You know, you have the media, of course, you know, in the pocket of the corporations. I mean, it's like one big, huge conspiracy.
Yes, yes.
And I often wonder, these CEOs and these people who are behind all of this despicable damage, I mean, do they think they're not going to be harmed by this? You know, they're going to be eating food that you know, that probably is going to cause cancer or whatever. I mean, we don't even know what the GMOs are going to do to us down the road. They seem like they're you know, they think that they can't be hurt by the damage that they're doing, as if their money is going to somehow protect them from the damage they're doing to the planet. I just don't understand the logic, quite frankly.
Well, who can blame you for not understanding it? It's illogical logic. But I'll tell you one thing. This is interesting. You know, the Monsanto Corporation is perhaps the largest, and not perhaps, it is the very largest proponent of genetically modified organisms in food. And it is undoubtedly the case, because I've heard this firsthand, that the staff at Monsanto, the senior staff at Monsanto, only eat organic food.
Ah, okay. There you go.
Yeah, there you go. See, now these are your COs, who are the people
right.
who are doing all the damage. Now, that'll be true at the top of banking. It'll be true at the top of food production, oil, pharmaceuticals. At the top end, they know what's good food and what's bad food. And what they do is they make their profit by selling off all the cheap and bad food to everyone else, and they live on what they know is a healthy and well-produced product. And that is how they survive. And it is an extraordinary scenario that they've managed, if you like, to keep themselves protected in this sort of nest, while we can't seem to get through and penetrate through to that level. It is a cabal. It is a relatively small group of people. It's what they call the 1% in the Occupy movement. Mm-hmm. We are the 99%, we the people. It's 1%, but it's 1% who control and own, you know, 98 to 95% of the global trading network. Therefore, they have enormous power. And this situation that you described with the labeling has been going on recently in California, and I know in Washington State just recently, this very big mobilization of We the People, raising very significant amounts of money, $20, $30 million, I think, possibly, has been, of course, topped by the CEOs who can put in $100 million. No sweat,
right.
You know, no big deal. And therefore, they talk people out of what is actually a highly sensible initiative. Once those packages are labeled, contains GMO, they know, the CEOs, that they're finished. That's
yeah.
the end of organic, that's the end of genetically modified food for anyone who, you know, has the intelligence to read the package and make it a sensible decision based on what that information that they're taking in.
Absolutely.
GMOs themselves are essentially a completely unnatural type of food. What they did in the early days of this, which is about 20 years ago, the first one was called the Flavor Saver Tomato. What they did was they took genetic mature, a gene from a Icelandic cod, and put it into a tomato via the injecting the DNA of the tomato with the gene of the cod. The idea was to prevent tomatoes being flown from California to London freezing or going slushy in the airplane. This cod had a gene within it which actually held the temperature level within the product at a sort of medium point so that consumers could think they were buying fresh tomatoes. So what you've actually got there is a tomato fish. It's
yeah.
half fish, half tomato, but it's not called that. So, and that is how GMO works. They take a genetic material, DNA, from completely unrelated species and put it into something which they want to alter and patent and make money from. And
well,
the
repercussions,
yes, you come in.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. The repercussions.
No, I want to hear you. I want to hear your take. I've been going
well,
quite a while.
Well, you know, and I'm so glad you explained that, because I just heard two guys recently going at it on television. There was the anti-GMO guy, and there was the right-wing Republican corporatist on the other side. And the right-wing Republican corporatist, you know, thought, you know, he's this guy who thinks he knows everything. And he was trying to tell the GMO guy, oh, you're overreacting. You know, it's no different than when they made it so that we, you know, our tomatoes would grow bigger, or our corn ears would, you know, instead of it being like a 3-inch size ear of corn, now we have a, you know, maybe a 10-inch ear of corn. And the GMO guy, you know, the anti-GMO guy was saying, no, that's not it. You know, you're taking two totally unrelated species and basically making frankenfood.
Exactly. That was spot on. You know, I mean, that is the actual truth. There's no denying it. The interesting thing about it is that you might even think that some of these scientists, you know, these are some top scientists working in laboratories, would have realized that when you put something from a completely unrelated species into another species, it will affect the entire DNA of that species. Oh, no, they said, it's only going to affect one tiny part of it. Now, that is the type of thinking that's got the world into so much trouble. It's the opposite of holistic thinking. It's the opposite of the awareness of nature. It means that they actually don't know how life works at all. And so we are, again, we were straight at the beginning, we're just putting ourselves in the hands of people who are totally ignorant and totally concerned only with profit, which means we have to take a stand. We have to stop it. We have to find ways of feeding ourselves from proper foods. And then we have to stand up with others and demand action to change these situations. Everybody has to do that. Absolutely everybody. And then
well,
we all
know,
finally start taking control.
Well, I've seen on the internet that Europe seems to be making a lot more progress against Monsanto than we seem to be doing here in the United States. Is that actually true? Is Monsanto on the run in Europe?
Yes, it is actually true. Actually, it's interesting about Europe. Europe as a whole has a very small percentage of GM food in it. It's about 0.18 is being actually grown. That's tiny. In America, it's over 85% of all corn, all soya, and unfortunately now many other products too, are already genetically modified. You have no labeling. You have no way of knowing what you're eating. You're in the hands of these big corporations. And somehow or other in Europe, the citizens in Europe had some reaction, I would even say a subconscious reaction, some intuition, that anything called genetically modified cannot be good.
Right.
And they decided to get together and stand up and fight it. So almost every country in Europe that's been polled has come up with an 80% resistance. In other words, 80% of the population have said no to GMO in Europe. And that is a very serious voice on the political level. The political level simply cannot push forward, at least fast, when you've got that strong a resistance. So they've inched along, allowing here and there one or two things in. But essentially,
Has Monsanto bought off the politicians like they have here in the United States? I mean, President Obama, I mean, I'm a Democrat, but President Obama has a Monsanto guy in his cabinet.
Quite. He does indeed. And he, the CEO of Monsanto was the head of the agriculture department as well in America. So you see it's a revolving door between government and industry, and it's constant in America. It's a very extreme situation you've got to deal with, I'm afraid. It is true, certainly, that certain politicians definitely are bought off by Monsanto in Europe. I'm afraid the political breed today is the same all over the world. It's interested in very short-term power, 4 or 5 years, and it wants to, once it's got a taste of that power, it's like an aphrodisiac, it wants to hold on to it.
Right.
So you do get people being bought off all over the place. But if the resistance is very, very significant, then of course they realize they're not going to get voted in again if they stand out as being for something, which the great majority of citizens are against. And in that sense, the democratic system is still just about surviving in Europe. I think, that if the models developed in Europe of activism against genetically modified food probably have been successful because they have been based on looking at things from the regional perspective, not purely from the national perspective. So you've had different components of states within Europe deciding that they, at the more localized level, are going to keep this sort of product out. And actually, this would be my recommendation for activists in America. Although you should bombard Washington with your letters, your phone calls, your emails, your everything you can do, your social networking, more important still is to work with your local authorities and to say to them, look, let's make our particular state or our region a GMO-free zone. And this is how you actually collect the sort of community spirit. You get the whole thing going, and you can block, even if it's a national policy to have GMO, you can still block it within your region. Other regions then start copying it, and it spreads. That's what we succeeded in doing in Poland.
Well, and that's what areas are trying to do now with fracking. Do you have fracking over there as well? It's an assault on every, it seems like every front. You know, there's not a thing, it seems like, that's not under attack or threat.
Well said.
It's hard to get up in the morning, you know, if you really want to think about it. You know what I mean? People want to just bury their head in the sand and just go, you know, maybe it'll all collapse after I die, you know. What an attitude. But I can understand sometimes why people might say, well, gee, you know, let's just hope the world stays intact another 20 or 30 years, you know, and then, well, you know, whatever. Julian, I think you wanted to talk about some other things, too, besides just the you know, these ideas that you've shared so far. I wonder if you believe in the Illuminati, for instance.
Well, I think the Illuminati definitely do exist. We were mentioning before a small cabal of people who have a controlling influence over the planet. We don't have to call them by any particular name, but Illuminati has been the name which has been, it's a very real name. It was invented, if you like, back in about the 17th and 18th centuries in old Europe, and it was a group of people who got together who had interests in dominating their countries and ultimately developed an interest in the black arts, the satanic worship, the various forms of that which bring power to people via the opposite route from what we would talk about as power, the power of love, the power of light, the power of compassion. And they have exploited these dark arts in a form which has particularly centered on mind control. Now, that is where the whole advertising world comes in. And the reason why people feel frightened about getting out of bed and tackling things is because the media is controlled by the Illuminati. And advertising is controlled by the Illuminati. I'm talking about large scale. I'm not talking about the very small scale stuff.
You had Rupert Murdoch over there in England too. I mean, we have Fox News that literally has half the country turned into, you know, morons. You know, fear-based morons. And a lot of these are good people. You know, they're good people, but they are just totally brainwashed.
Well, that's exactly right. Now, the point is, if you watch, you know, the statistics in England are people watch 4 hours of television a day. I wouldn't be surprised if it's not even more in the States. It's probably about that. And then they have their mobile phones, their gizmos, you know, their iPods and all the rest of it. And then they have their computers. People are spending roughly 6 hours a day caught behind electronic information. Now, that is unreal. One cannot live that way for very long without being brainwashed. The fact of the matter is, of course, on the internet, thank God, you can find people like you, and there's plenty of it. There's the alternative stuff, and it's serious. It's the only news, the real news, we can actually find today. But nevertheless, the great majority spend 4 hours watching television. They are bombarded by something like, I don't know, let's say 6,000 advertisements every 2 or 3 days when they do that, every day of their lives. That seeps into the neocortex, and that comes out as being a primed message to the brain, buy this, buy that, do this, do that. And the actual brain, which has a function completely independent from any of that, is buried under a mass of garbage. So the first thing to do, folks out there, if you want to start getting on the road to independence again, to real life, and feel good about getting out of bed in the morning, turn off your television set.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard, you know, because believe me, I even try to turn off the TV. But then, you know, I think to myself, well, you know, I have to stay informed. I want to know what's going on. So it's this push-pull between do I want to know what's going on and, you know, I just want to unplug and go walk on the beach or it's really hard to strike a balance sometimes. But you're right. I mean, for the people who are listening to so much fear-based stuff, so much hate-mongering stuff. I mean, we just had a little story on TV. I mean, Halloween was last week. This poor woman in the South, and look, I come from the South. I know that ignorant mentality. She's proud that she's dressed her little boy up as a KKK, you know, and the poor child, you know, Ku Klux Klan, you know, I don't know if you, you know what Ku Klux Klan is. Okay.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so like the Aryan Nation or something like that. And, you know, it's incredible to me in this day and age that we still have people who are sort of operating on that level, you know. But, I mean, since President Obama has come into office, there's an organization in the country that monitors hate groups. We had like about, I think they said 100, maybe it was 1,000. It was either 100 or 1,000 hate groups before President Obama took over. Now there's like 13,000 militia and hate groups. You know,
it's extraordinary.
it makes me ashamed to say I'm an American sometimes, quite honestly. You know, I mean, is it that bad over in Europe? I mean, we just don't see into your world so much. I mean, is it that bad there too?
I don't think so. Unfortunately, Karen, I mean, I do have to say I fear America has gone very, very far in that direction, and it's going to be very tough as a nation to pull out of it. It's not gone that far in Europe, I'm glad to say, and it is the symptoms, however, all exist in Europe. We tend to import from the West. America is regarded as a very significant and important country, and people tend to bow and scrape to it. At least they do at the political level, not so much at the grassroots level. Therefore, the symptoms always come across the Atlantic and they get themselves rooted in, but they tend to be more confined. So I was going to say that one of the reasons I wrote this book, In Defense of Life, A Radical Reworking of Green Wisdom is the subtitle, is because, as you so accurately have portrayed yourself, we are really talking about defending life itself. Mm-hmm. So you can say to yourself, well, what is life? You know, what is life? Well, life is about we are creative. We are creative, sentient, human individuals, each one of us, and our life is supposed to be about expressing that. Expressing joy, expressing love, expressing compassion, expressing the beauty we see in ourselves and outside ourselves. That is the real life which we should all be working on. And we have to find the sort of materials which cultivate that attitude in order to give ourselves what you call the hope. And I would say even more than hope, I would say the volition to actually get out of bed and start doing things which make us feel good. So we need to be looking at and for materials which have a very positive direction, offer us not only hope, but practical examples, and there are millions in the world, and it's changing fast for the better, of various initiatives one can take to ameliorate the situation both locally and nationally and eventually globally. And the good news there, Karen, as far as I can see, is that there is a great awakening taking place. You know, as the darkness appears to be getting more extreme, the light is popping up in more and more and more places. We are learning some very hard lessons from this. We've usurped our power. We've given it to other people, to politicians, to CEOs of corporations, and now we've realized it, and we know we've got to take it back. That is going to produce a revolution, and it's going to be a revolution that starts within, because we're going to refine the light and we're going to go forward with that light, and that will blow apart all this darkness, all this death, hate talk, all that nonsense. It is actually just garbage, and we need to see it as that and go straight through it.
Yeah, I mean, I really think people have forgotten, I can't imagine that all of these gadgets really make people happy. You know, that 50 pair of shoes in the closet really make you happy. You know, having a $30,000 car really makes you happy. You know, I think too we have to reassess what happy is. I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but you know, but just like you're saying, what is life? Also, you know, what do we value? What is really meaningful? What's really worth fighting for? Is it the latest iPod? You know,
exactly. I don't.
Well, Julian, we're almost out of time here. I see my next guest is on the switchboard, but I want to ask you one last question. Because this is the one I always think about. You know, this is the question that always keeps me. For instance, people always say, Karen, don't vote for the Democrats, vote Green Party. And I say, well, I'm going to waste my vote if I vote Green Party, you know, and that's just going to be handing it over to an even crazier bunch, you know, the Republicans. But it sort of parallels this other issue. If we decentralize power And would the people really be able to survive? And would the world be better? I mean, and I'll just give you an example. There's a show on television now called Revolution. It's after the electric grid breaks down. And the United States, you know, becomes these fractured into like these 6 or 8 little divisions. And, you know, people don't have food now. They don't have water. You know, they don't have electricity. I mean, I guess I wonder, does it have to get that bad? Do we have to start all over again? I mean, could we really survive if government was decentralized? We wouldn't have Social Security anymore. We wouldn't have so many of the things so many of us depend on to live. I mean, what do you really see? I mean, how can we do this?
Good question, Karen. I think the truth of it is that we most certainly can survive. And I think it's a desirable factor, even if things aren't that bad, that decentralization takes place, because we now see that at the centralized level, we are not, none of what goes on at the centralized level is in the interest of people. It's in the interest of something totally outside of that realm, as we said before, profit and power. So look, once one sees that, one can't then say, oh, but let's hope that it actually turns out all right. It can't turn out all right. Which means we have to start taking control of our destinies at the non-central level. These are the first steps in being able to prove to ourselves that we can look after ourselves. We the people. We don't need politicians. We don't need CEOs of vast corporations. We don't need the corporations. We don't need all the gizmos you've described. We don't need any of that stuff. We're not getting happy through any of that. What does make us happy? I'll tell you what makes us happy. Working with fellow human beings towards doing something positive, creative, and ameliorating of the conditions which we face in. That produces real happiness. And one feels a sense of one's own power again coming up like a seed. We started this conversation talking about seeds. It's like planting a seed and seeing that seed grow. If we can do this regionally, locally, we will find we actually don't need that centralized system at all. Once we've done that, we will be beginning a new society, and as far as I can see, a much better one.
Well, I want to believe that. You know, I really do. I just think it's going to change. It will involve huge shifts. And, you know, I imagine that if things break down too badly, you know, you're still going to have the bullies who are going to, you know, beat up on the weaker people, and then you won't even have the government or the police or anybody like that to offer some modicum of protection, you know?
Well, you see, if we organize ourselves locally, we can organize to have all those things. But what we're not used to doing is thinking that we can do it. You see, we're always thinking someone else would have to organize it for us. This is our big mistake. We can do it. We will do it. And it'll be, not only will it be, a very remarkable experience, it'll be a very empowering experience, because it's that lack of empowerment which has enabled the big corporations, government, etc., to take a controlling influence. And that controlling influence is destroying our planet. So in a sense, there is almost no other option other than to go back to the regional. You're quite right. It's going to be difficult. No question of it. It's going to be very difficult. But that is a reality. That's a fact. We have to face the truth, look for the shamanic power within ourselves, you know, look for that thing which gives us that, I know I'm going to try and do this, and if I try and do this, I'm going to go forward in a spirit which is at least human. And once many people start feeling that way, we can change things. I've seen it happen. It is happening. It will happen. And there will be a completely new America 50 years down the line.
Yeah, because really when you think about it, we've become slaves. You know,
we are
really nothing but, I think of it as the word mark. You know, we're a mark for the predator corporations. We're just, you know, somebody to buy their junk, and they don't really care about the junk they're selling us. You know, it's not like there's even any integrity in their business anymore. You know, it's just, it's all just been reduced to how can we make them richer. And really, I think maybe if we all started thinking ourselves as slaves, because I think we are, you know, that may help motivate us a little bit more.
Well,
you know,
said.
If we...
Absolutely. I'm quite right. Absolutely. I mean, unless people like thinking of themselves as slaves, but good luck to them. I think that's, you know, bad luck, really. But, yes, exactly. Quite right.
Well, Julian, I've so enjoyed talking to you tonight, and I look forward to reading your book. And I can, and we didn't even get a chance to talk about everything. So I really recommend my my listeners look for your book, look for the other ideas you offer in there to help us free ourselves. Because, you know, Europe, I mean, the people in America and the people in Europe, you know, we have to figure out what works and, you know, borrow each other's ideas because, you know, we're all under the thumb of these people. And, you know, we need to figure out a way to, you know, share ideas and figure out what works.
Exactly.
So listeners, once again, Julian Rose's website, changingcourseforlife.info, changingcourseforlife.info, and his book is In Defense of Life. And give the subtitle again, Julian.
A Radical Reworking of Green Wisdom.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And I didn't even get a chance to ask you what it's like living on a country estate. It sounds so romantic and beautiful, but you've made it sound like it's been an awful lot of work.
Well, I own it. And, you know, when you're the owner of something, you're responsible for everything that happens there. So, of course, it's a lot of work, but it's been a very rewarding experience, and it's evolving into something very exciting. Maybe in another time we can talk about that.
Yeah, and you know, it sounds like you've gotten a lot of experience from that as well. And really, I mean this, if you'd like to come back on the show and continue this conversation, you know, please let me know if you want to get up another morning and, you know, and we can chat a little bit more and, you know, delve into the rest that we couldn't get to tonight. I'd certainly be up for it.
That's great. Well, I think up for it is the correct expression. If I can get
You're so
if
right.
I can get an alarm clock that is loud enough, I might be able to make a second one.
Julian, you've been great. Thank you so much, not just for your good sense of humor and your willingness to be on the show at 3 in the morning, but also for your wisdom. Thank you so much for giving us hope that we can do this and, you know, giving us some glimmers on how we might make it happen. Thank you. I really appreciate you.
Okay, not at all. And good luck with everything you do, too.
All right. Good night.
Good
sleep
night.
Tight. Hope you can go back to sleep.
Yeah, sure. I think I'll manage that. Not too much of a problem.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Well, listeners, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Julian Rose. And in just a minute here, we are going to get to Flash Silver Moon, and she's going to tell us what the cosmos has cooking up for us the next couple weeks and going to sort of tap into what she predicted last time, you know, what actually, you know, what we actually see come to fruition. And I'm sure she'll be talking to us about Mercury retrograde. But I want to just share a quick little thing here with you. I've been sharing excerpts from my book, Walking an Ancient Path, and you seem to enjoy that last time, so I'm just going to read you something very short here. This is from the chapter on prophecy and the power of prayer, and it's about, you know, how Goddess hears us. And I'll just read these couple paragraphs from this particular chapter here, chapter 17. There was another situation requiring that I embrace trust and prayer for an upcoming surgical procedure. The morning I waited in the hospital to be called back for the operation, I prayed. As I prayed and thought strongly of the Egyptian pantheon who had so often come to my aid, I clutched a bag of sacred items. These included images of Isis and Sekhmet for overall health and well-being, Thoth for guidance for the doctor, Anubis for the anesthesiologist, Horus for physical healing, as well as a piece of cloth that had been dipped in the waters of a healing well at Clonegal Castle. When I was taken further along the surgical preparation process and had to relinquish my talismans, I lay there quietly reciting positive affirmations about the successful outcome of the surgery and my body's ability to heal. I envisioned myself encircled by these deities, as well as some of my dearest guardian and healer sisters. This was the last image I remember before going on under anesthesia. When I awoke, much to my great surprise, I had no pain or discomfort besides a sore throat from the oxygen tube that had been put down my throat, aiding my breathing. When I left the recovery room and was brought to my own hospital room, I continued recovering in this positive mode. I did not need even an aspirin. I was up walking within hours and was sent home the next day when the usual recuperation time in the hospital would have been several days. The nurse and the doctor were astounded at my body's recovery, and I attribute it to my faith and the many sisters who were praying for me. This is not to say that if people don't recover quickly, their faith isn't strong and their deities have abandoned them. I truly believe in this case, at this moment of time in my life, with the positive energy flow of prayers that were directed toward me in surgery that morning, coupled with the belief I have much work yet to do for Goddess, she was ensuring my well-being. After surgery, as I wondered incredulously about the overwhelming positive outcome, it came to my attention that there have been scientific studies done on patients recovering from heart surgery, wherein some were prayed for and others weren't. In this case, the patient did not know about the experimental prayer study taking place, so the issue of the power of their own minds didn't come into play. Those patients who had been prayed for recovered much more rapidly than those not prayed for. So did those praying, harnessing their energies and focusing their positive intention and attention toward a mutual cause. Did it actually help the patient heal? Are we affected by the will of others as well as our own? Well, it seems that just might be so. And I'll tell you about another experience that happened in California, plagued by wildfires a few years later, where prayer and intention, magic if you will, also had a positive outcome. So that was from Chapter 17 in my book. So let me unmute the phone and say hello to Flash. Oh, here we go. There, I think. Hey, Flash, how are you today?
Good. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for calling in. How are you today?
Well, it's been a very, very interesting day. And, you know, part of what's been going on, of course, has been lovely Mercury retrograde, which is always such a smooth cycle of time.
you're being sarcastic,
facetious.
I'm sure.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. I've had worse, but this one's been a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
And today, Jupiter, which has been going forward in Cancer for quite some time, has turned retrograde.
So what does that mean?
Well, any of the planets can go forward and they can go backwards. When they go backwards, it's referred to as retrograde. Now, it doesn't mean it's all horrible, although you can have some experiences that make you differ. But seriously, what it means is the energy is going internal. Instead of moving forward, it's going back inside you. And that's what makes everything slow down. So, for instance, because today is the first day of Jupiter going retrograde, big plans, Jupiter's about expansion. So the big plans, possibly spiritual issues, religious issues, political issues, may suddenly feel like they stalled. And are actually,
we had an election last night, too.
Yes. So, you know.
Well, I thought Mercury retrograde was going to end on Sunday. So the one ends, but we're still in another one?
Well, none of them necessarily begin or end when the others do. They all have their orbits. So it just so happens by the 11th of November, Mercury will start going forward. And that will let some of the things have been pent up. You know, that can be the good and bad news. Things that have been pent up, particularly verbally, particularly in terms of communication, will move forward. And if you understand, like, if you're driving in a car and you're going ahead 60 miles an hour, and suddenly the whole thing goes backwards, you're going to have that feeling of being thrown back a little bit if you were shifting gears. Suddenly, and that's energetically what's happening, either by going forward or backwards. So those first, the beginning and the end, are more disruptive.
But by the 11th, that's going to shift out of out
Mercury
of the cosmos.
Mercury will shift out.
Okay.
But as of today, Jupiter is going backwards, And it's basically, I so much loved Julian's work. I really enjoyed what I heard of him, and I totally agree with him. Really, really good stuff. And by going retrograde, it's our time to assess what do we really want? What do we really need? Really, really, in the deep parts of our soul, what do we need to warm up our home?
Mm-hmm.
What do we need for our families to maintain harmony or our relationships? All of that stuff. What about our investments? What about our income? All of this kind of comes under Jupiter, thinking about how that's going to work. I don't think that's going to be very helpful for Obamacare. I think it's going to, well, I think it'll ultimately be good, but I don't think it speaks well of things just going speedily along, which hasn't yet.
They're saying that it's going to be fixed by the end of November. If you had to look at the chart,
I'd say no.
Okay.
No, I'd say March.
March.
Because that's when Jupiter will go direct, on the 6th of March. And I think that in order for that to really move forward, there's kinks that are going to come out of it, and it may very well be a better program by the time it does come out.
You know, it's a shame Obama didn't enlist an astrologer like Reagan did.
I know. In all the ancient cultures, we were hired. They didn't do much without us.
Right. Right.
You know, a lot of the, like Hitler had an astrologer, but he didn't listen.
Yeah.
Hitler was told, don't go to Russia, go to England. And that's what the astrologers told him. All the wise folk told him not to go to England. Meanwhile, back in the British Isles, all the witches are hanging out on the White Cliffs of Dover and the New Forest. And they're doing ritual to keep the damn Nazis out.
Yeah, it was Dionne Fortune and at least her, and I'm sure others.
Yeah.
So Flash, you know, I don't want to focus too much on last month, but just,
yes,
you know, for your kudos, what did,
yes,
you predict last month that actually came to be? And then tell us, what do you think, besides what you just said, you know, what's the rest of the month going to look like?
Well, always October is a very challenging, harsh month. It's very, very disrupted. It's a seasonal change. Some are more harsh than others. But we had that full moon called the blood moon in Aries, and a lot of more violent energies manifesting towards the end of October. And look at all the shootings.
Right.
I mean, it's ridiculous. I must say, you know, I'm all about full disclosure, but I'm starting to think, shut up.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about them. These guys are after their 15 minutes. They're hating their lives. They're crazy or they're not, or they're violent. There's something that's totally off. And they go and they do these horrible things to people. And, you know, look, if you want to take yourself out, do it before you shoot a half dozen people.
Right, yeah.
And then let's just not talk about them. Let's not glut the media with these horror stories, which gives some other poor sucker a good idea of how to end his life and get on the newspaper.
Right, and I think the media just does it because they want to live, you know, they want to control us and, you know, keep us in a state of fear. Because
absolutely,
if we become too empowered, we might decide we can, you know, change things.
Yeah, and we definitely can. And, you know, in reference to what Julian was saying about how we can, and that's so much happening this month. This is going to be a much more mellow month overall than October was. And we're not going to be dealing with some of the energies from the Grand Water Trines, which had so much flooding. That's not going to be happening, which is good. we could use a little more peaceful month. But, you know, if you remember what was going on with Sandy, for instance, and some of the other in Oklahoma, where there was so much destruction, and, you know, I must say some of it man-made through HAARP, but never mind that for the moment. The people got together. And, okay, FEMA sucked. It still sucks. But the people worked together to make sure people got drug out of their houses. People weren't left hungry. You know, everybody pitched in however they could. And, of course, you're always going to have some idiots who, you know, act like thugs. That's just part of the picture. But we did have a much more strong resonance of average people helping their neighbors. So we do that. We do that when we have to. And maybe we missed, there might have been more governmental help in the meantime, but we take care of ourselves. And we can decentralize. And that's part of what the energies are about with this Uranus-Neptune square we've been dealing with for about 2 years. And when we have the big blow-ups and blowouts, it's when the two of them are forming in the exact 90-degree angle. Sometimes it's like 86 degrees or 89 degrees, and that's not, it's when you're close to the fire, and when I say the fire, I'm referring to the exact aspect that's happening. When that occurs, that's when the manifestations in the world are happening. We started with Arab Spring and the Occupy movement. Those all were features of the beginning of that transit, and there'll be a few more between now and I think it's 2015. But we just had one in the early part of November, and it's all about change. It's about not going for the lesser of two evils, but actually trying to find a place to get into the bedrock of what's wrong with our culture and busting it up.
Right, right.
I mean,
well, the only problem is
that's,
you know,
what's trying to happen.
Talk to you, you know, they'll say different things are the reason things are the way they are. I mean, there was actually a Republican on television saying that, you know, the reason, you know, so much is going wrong in the world is because women now can get abortions. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So, you know,
and
so
Santa Claus,
his solution to world problems would be don't allow women to get abortions, you know, where our solution would be get rid of men like him.
Yeah. Now, there's a plan. You know, that's a much, much better idea. The thing is, though, and the I Ching says this, in order for evil to be vanquished, first it must be exalted. And those little evildoer Republicans are exalting evil every chance they get. And it's, you know, their craziness is actually, I think, affecting more the core, the old guard of the party, and I think they're going to crazy themselves right out of a party.
I think you're right about that. I really do. It just isn't happening fast enough, but I think,
well,
you
none
can
of it's
see
fast
it
enough.
Slowly.
We want it yesterday.
Yeah.
We want it like 2 weeks ago.
Well, you know, while we're on politics, I mean, maybe you don't need to do a chart to answer this, but I'm curious if have you been inspired to do Hillary's chart, and I wonder if you think she's going to run, or do you still have to do that yet?
I still have to do that yet, and I will. You know, I think she's certainly the most qualified, in a sense. But qualified for what?
Yeah,
you know, qualified to keep it as it is, but just have a woman's face?
Right, right. See, that's what worries me, because her and, you know, Bill, I mean, they were big corporatists. I mean, NAFTA went through with Clinton in the White House.
Yes.
I mean, actually, I was thinking about Elizabeth Warren. She seems to be so much more for the people. I mean, I hate to say that. I want to see a woman in the White House, and I'd certainly rather have somebody like a Hillary than a Sarah Palin, or even one of the other more reasonable Republican women. But I'm just afraid she's going to support the status quo.
She will. She will. And, you know, as we bought with Obama, better than what we had.
Yeah.
You know.
But I think Obama has taught us that the person in the White House cannot be, you know, one person can't get the job done.
Right.
You know. So even if we get Hillary, even if she was, you know, everything we want her to be, she can't do
it
herself anyway.
She's not. You know, yes, she'd be better than some, no question. Yes, she's extremely qualified, and she knows how to work the old boys club. We don't want the old boys club, even with a girl running it.
Right. Well, I don't want to get too sidetracked on politics. I'm sorry. But, you know, you and I are political, so we naturally go in that direction.
Yeah.
So what else do we need to know about November? Hmm?
That's part of what the outer world shows us, but it's also a mirror, very much a mirror of our inner world. And, you know, like you said, what do we need? Do we really need the next new great little phone? You know, I mean...
Mm-hmm. Aren't we bored with that yet?
I would hope, but, you know, there's people that aren't.
Right.
And... you know, I think, I wish this weren't true, but I think we're probably going to have, you know, a couple more serious hardships, at least a couple, that are going to occur to really get people awakened to where the energy needs to go. I think we're going to be seeing some real scary stuff about Fukushima. It's finally going to start to be on the mainstream news feed.
I heard that there's some big cluster of junk that's going to be hitting the West Coast, radioactive cluster of junk that's going to hit the West Coast in not too long.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably going to happen this month. And one of the other, we've got some real interesting planetary features. We've got the Pluto Uranus square that is such a shake them up, and both on the political and emotional and within our personal politics, our sexual politics, and with the Earth changes. Next to that, we have the fact that Neptune is in Pisces now and has been for some time. This is a long transit, and we have a whole crapper full of planets in Scorpio right now. So there's a lot of secrecy going on. And, of course, there's a lot of secret tellers. And we're going to see more and more of things being revealed this month because of the Scorpio influence.
That should be fun.
Yeah. There's going to be lots more revelations and revolutions and places where governments are holding on by a thread may go right over that edge. I think that's likely. And, you know, I think that there will be some good, finally, with the Affordable Care, but it's just not going to be as fast as people thought.
Right.
And it even made me wonder, you know, it's so easy for things to get hacked.
Oh, you know what? I thought that right off the bat, that there was sabotage. Because, I mean, not only did a lot of the
If they know how to take out elections, what's a bill?
Yeah. You had so many governors who didn't even take the money that they needed to set up websites in their state. And,
yeah, that
was our
Florida state asshole.
Yeah. So, there's so much working against it. You know, even if... imagine if you know, there was support for it and everybody wanted it to succeed, but there's so much money on the right. You know, you
right.
can just pay people to do anything, and that would be a wonderful revelation, wouldn't it? With the Koch brothers' fingerprints all over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, if that could be one of the revelations.
Well, I think it's quite possible, and maybe even this month. But it's like, you know, oh my goodness, we just found a huge 1,000-megaton bomb that's sitting right underneath affordable care. All right, who's going to unplug it? And how long is that going to take? And who's ready with the new website? You know, and on and on and on.
Right.
So it's probably going to take some time once they even find out who's stealing the cookies from the cookie jar.
Okay, so lots of revelations to unfold this month.
Yeah, and lots of things conveniently hidden as well.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's not going to be as violent a month, but it's also going to show us a lot of hidden issues and a lot of manipulation. I think we're going to see a lot better as far as the pipeline and the GMOs. I think there should be some good movement there.
Okay.
And that's, you know, I would say that's really good to look forward to that. You know, basically, I mean, I personally, I don't feel like a slave, but I don't have that kind of job.
Right.
You know,
right.
I've been working for myself since forever.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're sort of in a you know, an independent, more of an independent state already,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, everybody is somewhat dependent on this corporate monster that we live in, but I am more liberated. That's just the truth.
Yeah.
But people do need to really face the fact that if they are locked into the system, that they really are slaves.
Yeah, yeah,
and
absolutely.
And we do need to make different systems. It's not about fixing the old. It's just recreating something new.
New.
You know, I've always believed that. That's, you know, because you can't fix this machinery.
Yeah, it's too far gone.
Yeah, and that's also the Pluto-Uranus energy is about revolutionary-type change, not Band-Aid change.
Well, I am so ready. And it's so interesting that, you know, Julian, you and Nikki Scully is about ready to come up here in a minute. And, you know, the whole topic tonight has been about, you know, change and transformation and empowerment and, you know, what we the people have to do to change the world, you know. And, wow. You know, I would be really interested, Flash, if it's possible. I mean, can an astrologer do a chart for the – I would imagine you can do a chart for the country and see, you know, what it looks like for the next 5 years?
That'd be a huge job, 5 years. But, you know, we can certainly do one for the next year.
A year out or something.
Yeah.
Well, if you decide to do that, let me know. You know, I think maybe more now than ever, people, it would help them to know what's around the next bend.
Sure.
You know, things just
well,
feel
I mean,
so...
if you want to do that, like, soon or even, like, maybe for the new year?
Maybe so. If you have the time, you know, I'll schedule you in maybe the first week in January, and if you have the time to do that, that would be awesome.
I'll make it my business to do it.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Well, you know, the whole show sort of got pushed back a little bit, and I'm not really running on time, so I apologize to you, Flash, for taking you late. And I know Nikki can hear me talk, and I'm apologizing to her, too. But we're in Mercury retrograde. Can I use that for an excuse?
Always. And Jupiter retrograde. But
and
Neptune
Jupiter
is
retrograde,
start
too. It
has forward.
Been a rough week.
Yeah, well, Jupiter started retrograde today, which means today is more glitchy than other days. But Neptune is also, I think tomorrow or late today, is going to go forward. And we don't feel Neptune quite as much as we feel Jupiter or Mercury because it's way out there. So it moves slower, and it's more the energy of the collective as not so much like the personal.
Right.
But it should be a much more magical time.
Well, that'll be a treat for us.
Yeah.
Well,
if you had to wrap it up
in a minute flash, how do you want to close? What do you want listeners to know?
Well, I would say, given the fact that Neptune is moving forward, that gives us the opportunity to really open those third eyes really wide. The energetics of the time are changing like mad, and I've never been slow psychically, but I'm doing warp speed now, and it's very pleasant, but also because we're being sensitized, we're sensitized to everything. More chemical stuff bothering us and more chemicals going into the atmosphere, into the water, all that stuff. So there is that sensitivity that's not so good that we have to play with as well, but our psychic abilities and really learning, everyone, open up, be your first level of information. You don't need to look to this one or that one. And sometimes we do. Sometimes we do listen to wiser folk. But we need to particularly go on our guts because we have that channel open all the ways. And
well,
now
again,
it's
about
time.
Being more self-reliant. You know,
yes.
I hate to say it because it's such a Republican thing, but I can see some benefit, you know, in being more self-reliant in some cases, you know.
Yeah. Well, the fact that, you know, we all have a bullshit detector should we choose to use it.
Right.
And in these days of lies and misinformation and no information, it's really, if you feel like something is wrong, it's because it is.
Right.
And likewise, if you're feeling like, I feel good about what's coming around the corner. It is.
Probably is.
Well, we know. True. We know, and we need to start trusting ourselves more. And, of course, there's so many things that mess with our pineal glands, but the more we clean up our lives on all levels, the better off we're all going to be.
Okay. Well, Flash, why don't you give your website in case any listeners want to get in touch for a reading or, you know, any of the other stuff you do. They can go to your website and see all the various services you offer.
Sure. Yes, I do tarot readings, astrological charts. I work with stones. I work very much with the animals of all kinds. And anything that I do, just because I may be 1,000 miles away, that doesn't matter. I can tune into you. I can tune into your animals. So you go to flashsilvermoon.com, and you might want to look at my Wise Woman Tarot deck as well. It's a very, very interesting piece of work. So thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Flash. I appreciate it. And again, my apologies for getting to you a little late tonight. Okay, until next time.
It's the retrograde.
I know. Thank you.
Okay.
Good night. Have a good Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
Thank you, too.
Well, listeners, thank you for continuing to stay tuned in right now. And next up, we have Nikki Scully. We're getting to her a little bit late, but I hope she'll forgive me. I know you probably know who Nikki Scully is. She's been on the show before, but just in case not, let me read her bio, and then we're going to jump right into our chat about her recent book, Planetary Healing, Spirit Medicine for Global Transformation. Well, Nikki Scully has been teaching, healing, and working with the shamanic arts and the Egyptian mystery since 83. Techniques from her alchemical healing form are used internationally by thousands of practitioners. In the 80s, Nikki founded Shamanic Journeys, which specializes in inner journeys and her retreats, teleweb classes, and spiritual pilgrimages to Egypt. Her latest book we're going to talk about tonight, as I mentioned, is Planetary Healing, Spirit Medicine for Global Transformation, which she co-wrote with her husband, Mark Hallert. Other of her books include Alchemical Healing, A Guide to Spiritual, Physical, and Transformational Medicine, becoming an oracle, connecting with the divine source for information and healing, which is a 7-CD audio program, and power animal meditations, as well as the Anubis Oracle and Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt, both co-authored with Linda Starwolf. She's a busy, 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 busy lady. She lives in Eugene, Oregon, where she maintains a comprehensive healing and shamanic consulting practice, and she has various websites, shamanicjourneys.com, theanubisoracle.com, hathorsmirror.com, planetaryhealingbook.com, and becomingandoracle.com. And we'll try to mention those again before we say goodnight to Nikki. But Nikki, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your patience. Are you there? Nikki? Hello? I wonder what the problem is. Nikki? Well, listeners, while I wait for Nikki to get back to the phone, I will wait. I think that I might hear her. Nikki, are you there? So strange. Well, while I wait for Nikki to get back, let me just do something here with my switchboard and see if this makes any difference. Oh, she disappeared. I hope she will call back. Well, while I'm waiting for Nikki to call back, here we go, Mercury retrograde again. I wanted to share with you, wait, here she is. Let's see. Hold on. Nikki, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi.
Don't tell me you can't hear me.
Well, we were just talking about Mercury retrograde, and there it rears its ugly head. I imagine you might have been there.
That was so weird.
I know. Well, I'm glad you're with me now. Thank you so much. I just got finished reading your bio, and I've been looking forward to talking to you tonight. And,
I wanted to say that I was listening to Flash. What's her name, Flash?
Flash,
yes.
Silvermoon, uh-huh. She's with us pretty regularly.
Yeah, and she's wonderful, and it sounds like she and I are very much in sync and doing a lot of the same things.
Well, and
except
if you heard my first
part.
Guest, I didn't really plan it this way, but these things just managed to happen, it seems like, serendipity, whatever. But my first guest, I mean, all three of you were so much in sync. You know, y'all could have been three persons on a panel, and because Julie and Rose was talking about in defense of life and, you know, GMOs and how we have to, you know, shift gears and transform ourselves and, ways we can do it on the mundane world where your work is a little bit more on the interior, I believe.
Right.
You know, it's a good bookends, you know. But your new book out, Planetary Healing, Spirit Medicine for Global Transformation. First of all, I have to ask you, how was it writing a book with your husband?
Well, it wasn't so much writing the book with him as being with him. It took us 25 years to write that book. And it because, you know, he was here. He was with me for about 3 months before he really got initiated into where he was. I mean, he just sort of wound up here and stayed. And then and Chernobyl happened, and that was sort of the beginning of our work together.
Okay.
And so he's been my visionary ever since he and I learned that he could do that, which was shortly after we got together. And
well,
so,
you know, Roy and I have been married for 33 years, and we're about to write some books together. We want to write some children's goddess books, and we very much are on the same page, but we come at things from totally different positions. So trying to figure out how to, you know, meet in the middle, it's going to be an interesting dance.
Right. Well, for us, it was like he's a direct line for me to my teacher Thoth in the beginning. I mean, when he first learned that he had this capacity to communicate, I didn't have it yet. I didn't really get it until I wrote, till I did the Anubis Oracle deck. So I was relying on him and on a lot of my students for almost like telephones to Thoth.
Yeah, like a channel.
And
yeah.
But it wasn't like channel.
Yeah, they were your link.
Yes. And so he would have these experiences and describe them to me, and then I would have to translate them into initiations and journeys so that other people could have those experiences and learn from them.
But, you know, just hearing you talk about that, it really piggybacks on what I was just saying with Flash and what I was just saying with Julian. You know, those kinds of experiences we have with each other are so much more valuable. You know, this personal development, this interconnection, this sharing. You know, give me that any day over the newest gadget, you know? I mean, I think that's just a better quality of life.
It's been amazing. It's just brought so much magic into our lives because we would have to ceremony to bring in the teachings. And sometimes I would sign up to do a teaching and, you know, 2 weeks out I still didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And if it's the Egyptian mysteries, well, it can be a week out. And going to Egypt, I don't know until I get there because it's different every time.
Well, and that way you know you're not working with your left brain either, you know. I mean, if you planned it all ahead, you wouldn't really be tapped in using that divine intuition and letting it flow. You would just be, you know, you would just be planning it yourself without divine guidance, I guess.
Right, and we, you know, everything that is in that or any of my other books has come through divine guidance and mostly through ceremonial situations. And
that's what opens the door for you.
Yeah.
The ritual.
I'm old guard. I'm a child of the 60s.
Now, when you say that says, well, and, you know, maybe I shouldn't even ask you this, but, you know, I've had so many guests on the show, and I'm so fascinated by, you know, the great masters who used, sacred hallucinogens to make that contact. Do you mind me asking you if you've ever done that in ritual to, you know, open that gate?
Well, when I started doing psychedelics in 1964, I really didn't understand the sacred nature of it because I was still in the vanguard and I didn't have any guides.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess when I was with the Grateful Dead, I was married to one of the managers for 14 years. And
whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's how I got to Egypt the first time.
Okay.
And that's when I discovered on my own the sacred nature of sacraments. And then it was a very difficult time to have that kind of a teacher because of the laws and, you know, you always had to have, especially when you're associated with a group like that, and you're a target to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became my mission to create teachings that could provide the same provocative inspiration as I would get from psychedelics at Grateful Dead concerts.
Pretty hard task.
but it sure has been interesting.
I bet.
Then,
I'd like to be on the fly on the wall in one of your rituals.
Well, it's not that I have to do all that much anymore. That was the catalyst.
No, but
and
now you've
so
got
now,
it perfected.
Occasionally, I have to, you know, clean out the cobwebs and dust off my brain cells, but. you know, neither Mark and I, you know, he has a lot of serious back issues, and I have back issues, and I just broke my hip, so we're in pretty chronic pain. So we've learned how to be much more direct, which is what we're teaching in our books, especially planetary healing.
Well,
how
you know,
to connect with your highest wisdom. Huh?
Well, but do you think being direct, maybe as soon as you said that, I instantly got this hit that we don't have time. We have to be direct. We can't beat around the bush anymore. I mean, is there something to that?
Oh, no, it's absolutely true. We have to, you know, find that shift from our mind to our heart and realize that that's where the true intelligence is. And then we have to have a direct line with our high self or the Almakua, which is, would be the collective high self, or for different people, it's, you know, there may be different guides that represent the high self, but it's all about coming into that band or frequency where you have a PhD in wisdom.
Right.
Because
right.
You're right there with the ascended masters, with the deities of various pantheons, with Thoth, who is my direct teacher.
And I was just reading a section from my book, Walking an Ancient Path, where I appealed to him and Isis and Sekhmet and had a very positive outcome for a surgical procedure that I wrote about in Chapter 17 in my Walking an Ancient Path book. There are some powerful deities there.
And they're all inside us because they
yeah.
are our ancestors. We, you know, everyone comes from the stars.
So we
you
have
know,
that stardust. We have that stardust in us.
Ram Dass so eloquently put it, just because a being doesn't have a body doesn't mean you want to hang out with them. So you have to be discriminating about your choice. But if you're always aimed at the highest and most intelligent and, you know, love and wisdom, then you find that connection to that plane in whatever way you do that, by whatever name you call it, then once you have that direct connect, then you know that the teacher is within you as well as
right.
without you.
Right, and there's a liberation in that certainty. There's a
oh,
a
there's
relief.
A huge liberation. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a relief.
Oh, my God.
We can keep going there, or I also wanted to talk about your chapter, Intelligent Evolution, and just briefly, I wanted to know what's going on in Egypt these days. Is it safe for travelers? You know, we probably have about 20 minutes, 15 minutes maybe, because Lane Redman passed away. I don't know if you know that. She was the author of When the Drummers Were Women. And I wanted to, you know, save a few minutes to do a little memorial to her tonight. But
okay.
Where do you want to take the conversation, Nikki? Intelligent Evolution, Egypt, or
well, let's start with Intelligence Evolution, see how fast I can cover that.
Okay.
We're at a mutate or die situation. We don't have time for classic evolution. It's very time-consuming. And anybody who has been through cancer and participated in their healing, for me, shamanistically working with the chemicals and chemotherapy and the radiation, and with my husband and, you know, anybody else that happened to come by that was at that level, knows that you have to die to your old self to make a complete mutation. And that the more of us do that, the more of us that succeed in healing from cancer, you know, that goes into the stream of the collective DNA.
But
and
what does
so,
that mean really, Nikki? How do you die to your old self to become somebody new? What, I mean, that sounds wonderful metaphorically, but what does that really mean? That's, or is that too complicated to go into in a short period of time?
It's not. It's just a, it's a shamanistic, it's, I, they say that that's a shamanistic path, or the path of shamans, but I think it's more a matter of recognizing that it happens for all of us all the time, and if we learn how to bring it on, so to speak, we might not have to scatter ourselves across this freeway.
Right.
You know, in order to put ourselves back together. But
is it sort of like, you know how people use the expression, you reinvent yourself, you sort of say goodbye to an old life and you start living anew? Is it more than that?
I think it's more like outgrowing your old skin,
mm-hmm.
and having to leave it behind.
Mm-hmm.
Like a snake.
Your old ways of doing and thinking and being.
Yes. Yeah, that's very much part of it. But in my personal path, like now, I know my daughter had a miracle healing, and she did not experience it in the way that I did. But she did mutate because it was an absolute miracle, and it was absolute instantaneous, or I'd say over a matter of 2 months, because of the different things that I think went into that. But what I'm
so you're
what
actually
I'm
talking about a physical
to,
change, not just your body physically changes. It's not just you have an emotional shift or a psychological shift.
Not just that. The shift happens at a much deeper level. It happens at the DNA level, and the old stuff falls out and new stuff comes in, and in my chapter on conscious evolution, there's actually a journey that you can take to experience that. And there's also, it's in the book, and it's also, I did it for one of my planetary healing calls to action, which I do as a freebie on a conference call every month or so. And quite recently we did the one on conscious evolution, and we did the initiation, so you can find it on my website or on the planetaryhealingbook.com website. Either place you can get to it. And we need to realize, and then the chapter on conscious evolution, which I spent a lot of time talking with Bruce Lipton about, he gave me a lot of the supportive studies to how science has come to not only recognize but to participate in making these more radical changes, and that, you know, and validates this shamanic experience of it. And
okay.
So my work is to provide people with these experiences so that they can not only connect to and recognize their high self and their greatest inner teacher, but they can also learn how new ideas are created, how we can find solutions through this journey work, but then, of course, you have to act on it. Just
right.
Knowing it is not enough.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was just talking to Flash and Julian about, you know, how we have to, you know, maybe decentralize our world, our government, and, you know, really do things very differently. And that's kind of a scary process. But I think armed with tools like you're offering, not only does it give insight and inspiration, but maybe it gives people a little bit more, makes them feel a little bit more secure about how to do it or what they're going to do, or maybe even the impetus to do something, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what our hope is. And our hope with it also is, by doing these kind of conference calls, create community so that and we have people call in from all over the world. And so we have the exponential power of our numbers that is very significant factor in the power of working with these tools that are in that book. But they're also meant for people who are isolated, who don't have community, and you can work by yourself and tap into a much larger base.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
A CD in there called Making Spirit Medicine, where you actually go through a ceremony and learn how to make medicine and tie in with everyone who's ever added their contributions to this medicine.
Mm.
And not only imbibe it and find healing for yourself, but also healing for your friends and healing for the planet. Because everything happens on those three levels, self, community,
right.
and planet.
Right.
Whether we're in Egypt or whether we're doing planetary healing work, which is sort of the same thing, you know, here, there, wherever you are, you want to try and do it on all three levels at the same time, because we simply don't have time.
And, you know, and like you said, even if you're solitary and alone, you know, you have to remember you're part of it, that you're the you're the microcosm of the macrocosm. And you know, my point being, like that 100th monkey theory, you know, or the morphic fields, that, you know, if we get enough people, it sort of shifts things in the direction we need it to go.
And we can connect consciously, whether we're isolated or whether we're in circles. And when we join our circles is wonderful. When we, you know, can combine. But we can also tap in. And, yes, the tools on how to do that, how to overcome the fear, all those things that are given through journeys that you can take or share with a friend and give to each other and realize the power that you have as an individual.
Yeah, because our society certainly wants us to feel neutered, that's for sure.
That is for sure.
So, Nikki, before we talk about Egypt, I don't know, I feel like I'm supposed to ask you, if somebody is new to all of this, I mentioned a lot of your different projects, you know, your current book, Planetary Healing, Spirit Medicine for Global Transformation, but you also have the others that I mentioned, Alchemical Healing, you have Becoming an Oracle, I mean, all of those.
Right.
For a beginner, where should they start? You know, if they don't know the lingo yet and all.
I would say start with alchemical healing, because that's a self-initiation process to learning all the principles, not only of healing, but of creativity.
Okay.
And it's part of a trilogy that includes power animal meditations and planetary healing. And power animal meditations came first, because learning how to commune with nature, and that nature provides us all these gifts in plant allies and animal totems, and learning how to connect with spirit guides enlarges your healing team, because you have the perspective. A quick story. When I was first studying healing, my teacher said that she would be teaching psychic surgery. So the only place I could get information at the time was in the magazine Shaman's Drum. This was in the very early 80s. And I found an article that described three different kinds of psychic surgery, Brazilian, Philippine, and I can't remember what the other one was. But one of these psychic surgeons had crossed over, you know, dead Western doctors that worked through him, and depending on which one was working with him, that's the language he would speak while he was doing the work. So I went and did a little ceremony and said, "Hey, I want to be able to do that. You know, send me a dead doctor, and I'll do his work." And it was several years later where I looked around and discovered I had a whole team of surgeons. I mean, my bear ally, with his her adeptness with her claws, is one of the best surgeons that I know. And the snake is one of the best eaters of tumors. And, you know, I could be sitting looking into a person I'm looking with, and I suddenly realize I've got, you know, a whole team working with me, offering their assistance and guidance.
Well, you're just using all the different animal totems and their different gifts. And
and then you get into Shamanic Mysteries of Egypt and the Anubis Oracle, and you have the whole Egyptian pantheon.
Right, right, right. Absolutely.
It's all about relationships, making and sustaining relationships in the spirit world, and being willing to use them like you needed to use them when you went into surgery.
Right.
You did, and you felt the effects.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's amazing, too, when once you feel that, you know, it. I think it sort of changes you. You know, you don't see things the same again. So you sort of have a different reality or a different outlook about everything. Well, let's talk a little bit about Egypt before we have to wrap this up tonight. What do you want us to know about Egypt? Is Egypt still a safe place to go? And how has all the, you know, the Egyptian spring and all of that, has that changed things for tourists?
I'm still comfortable going there. I went 3 weeks after the initial revolution with a group, and we had the time of our lives. There were hardly any tourists there. The most recent I was there was in March, and it was fine. And then I had a trip planned for October that I had to cancel. I just, after breaking my hip, I just didn't have really the fight in me to get the people to hang on and wait. Otherwise,
yeah.
I'd just be coming back from Egypt now.
Right,
and the people
right.
that I know that are over there and that have taken groups there, it's been a wonderful time to be in Egypt. And it's
so are you going to reschedule?
The Egyptians need us.
My next one is
in March. And in addition to being an Egyptian mysteries tour, it's going to be a service tour. And we're my partner in this one, Indigo Ronlove, is studying for her master's in eco-psychology at Naropa. And for her master's project, we are going to take this group to Egypt, and we're going to work with Egyptian middle school children, we hope. She's going in a few weeks to get it all lined out for us. But we're finding the right people to learn how to recycle plastics in a good way, making plarn, and we'll clean up around the sites. The garbage has been a big problem in Egypt, and teach them how to make building bricks out of the old water bottles and all the various ways that they can learn to recycle and take pride in having their monuments and their areas cleaned up. So, and that will be, and we will not short ourselves from our 9-day sail on our private luxury dahabeah that only holds 20 of us. And
that'll just be an extra benefit, that additional work there.
Yeah, but we will
yes.
still do all the Egyptian mystery works and initiations. But this is also a part of the planetary healing component and may be where we go alchemically with these Egyptian mysteries as to how, you know, well, I can't say. I mean, that's just popping in my head as I'm talking. It's like,
you're
going
to go with the flow.
That's crazy.
You're going to go with the flow. I hear
but
you.
But we're very excited, and I'm particularly excited after over 60 tours to be able to give back in this particular way. I've always wanted to do something like this.
Well, I hope that works out really well for you, Nikki. It sounds exciting, and I hope you're well soon from your hip injury.
Thank you.
You know, many blessings to you on that, and you know, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you. Can I say one other thing about
what
I'm doing? Like
sure.
Right now I'm doing parts of alchemical healing on phone classes and making them very reasonable, and I'm doing that. Right now I'm in the middle of one on power animals. Next week I'm going to do one on the elements. And then the first week in December, Christine Paintowler, who is this incredible self-initiated hermeticist, Tarot, she has the tarotuniversity.com, and her program did all the AOL Tarot for decades, I think. And anyway, she and I are going to do a workshop at my house the first weekend in December. I think it's the 9th and 10th or whatever that is, where she's going to do an astrological overlay of the Anubis Oracle, you know, and her deck.
Okay.
And that should be an amazing workshop, and people can stay at my house. And,
okay.
So I just want them to know about that. That's going
to
be
And the best way to reach you is shamanicjourneys.com if they want more information.
shamanicjourneys.com and by email at office@shamanicjourneys.com.
Okay. Well, I hope if you're ever doing something in Los Angeles, you let me know.
Well, I will.
Okay.
I certainly will, and I'm happy to come down there anytime because that's where my family is.
Okay.
So if
All
you
right.
can
well,
think of anything, I'll be there.
Okay. Well, thank you, Nikki.
Thank
I wish
you.
We could talk longer, but we're almost out of time, and I want to give a couple minutes here to Lane Redman, who just passed away recently.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. I very much enjoyed talking to you.
Same here, Nikki, and be well and heal quickly, and I'm sure we'll be in touch about other things. Okay, listeners, I just wanted to let you know about Lane Redman. She has taken flight, in the words of Miranda Rondeau, one of her students who's a very talented drummer here in the Los Angeles community. I just found out about this actually a couple days ago, and here are the words of Miranda. I couldn't say it better myself. She says, "It is with deep sadness I share that on Monday, October 28th, my dear frame drum teacher, muse, inspiration, trailblazing bee priestess, goddess of the drum, left her earthly body and took flight into the next realm. She was diagnosed with cancer in June and given 1 to 2 months to live, and she lived these last few months to the fullest. She said it was the best days of her life. She was cremated October 31st, and people globally gathered to honor and send her off. Students of hers gathered at the beach, and we offered this song, which she has posted on Facebook. I'm sure if you go to Miranda Rondeau on Facebook, you'll see it, R-O-N-D-E-A-U. I want to honor her, and I leave you with one of her quotes, and this is her quote. We are always together in the place of blessings, flourishing on the bank of the calm mind, filled with our song of satisfied creation, radiant in the pulse of all that is, of all that ever was, of all that ever will be. We begin again, to begin at the beginning, to end again, to end at the beginning. We begin to begin, to begin at the beginning, to end, to begin at the ending." That's a quote from Lane Redman. She was born on August 19, 1952, and passed away on October 28, 2013. I'm going to try to do a little bit more in her honor on my show next week, play some of her music that she has gifted me with to use here on the show. But according to Miranda, these are her words, and I couldn't say it better myself. Lane, she lived her last days with courage, grace, and determination to finish her film and the new edition of her book to be reprinted. She has inspired thousands of women and men with her book, When the Drummers Were Women, and has taught and inspired many to drum over the last 20 years. She has changed many lives along the way and opened a path for many women to drum, to create sacred ritual space and follow their dreams. She has left a legacy of resources to be continued to be shared for generations to come. And on that note, we will definitely be sharing some of her music next week on the show. And my guest next week will be Christopher Penzack. How appropriate, we will be talking about the mighty great ones who have passed away. And Kate Montana will also be one of my guests. She's the author of Unearthing Venus. We'll be talking about vagina values, masculine enculturation, and how culture has devalued women in Western society. So until then, listeners, remember, you are gas in my tank. Please keep the emails and show ideas coming. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks to Flash. Thanks to Nikki. Thanks to Julian for a great show tonight. I just wish it could have been longer. I could have spoken to all of you much, much longer, and I'm so sorry it wasn't, but we will speak again. So good night, dear listeners. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'll close with a little bit of music by Abigail Spinner McBride, Sacred Way. Mm-hmm.